Okay, 3, 2.
3, 2, hit it!
It's time to double down with Max and Stacy on Sputnik Radio. Now, coming up on the show, we talk to Plan B. That's right, that's his nomaker, Plan B. But first, as always, it's time to hear from Stacy with the hottest headlines of the day.
Well, Max, we certainly need a Plan B in the economy because it is a disaster. All of the money printing by the Fed is not helping anything. We saw retail sales down by 16.4% in April. It was expected to decline by 12%. This is the biggest in history, obviously, in modern history. That was down $130 billion in April. And it's so bad that 50% of Americans withdrew from their retirement accounts to get through day to day during this COVID lockdown.
Yeah, that sounds, really bad. Yeah, I was tweeting earlier that, look, the world has undergone a dramatic change, a sudden and dramatic change. Some countries were prepared. Some countries were not prepared, but quickly got prepared. I'm thinking about New Zealand. And some countries are pretending like nothing's happened, like the United States and Great Britain. They're in denial about what's going on. And I think it was, famously said at one point that intelligence and strength don't determine success, but more about adaptability and agility. And so if you're agile and you can adapt, you've got a challenge on your hands. If you're in denial or you're just not prepared at all and won't ever be prepared, then things are going to be getting kind of bad.
Yeah. An obvious solution, for example, look at Japan. They have not locked down. They have not collapsed their economy. They have 2% of rate of infection as the United States. And why? They just wear a simple mask. It costs 50 cents, but we can't do that here. And so instead, we prefer the different sort of paper. Instead of wearing a paper mask, you have the money printer go brrr. So we see the printing and printing and printing. And the past week, as we've mentioned, Paul Tudor Jones, legendary hedge fund manager who changed the whole hedge fund industry, he's gone long on Bitcoin. And, we're going to turn to this guest, Plan B, and he, Plan B is Plan Bitcoin, really. And we're going to look at why Bitcoin and why Paul Tudor Jones is going into Bitcoin as the money printers go brrrr. Because he has this model which looks at the stock to flow analysis of Bitcoin. And before we get to him, I want to explain to the audience what stock to flow is. And I just went to a good site called lookintobitcoin.com, and they had some really good definition of what this is. Stock to flow ratios are used to evaluate the current stock of a commodity, i.e. the total amount currently available, against the flow of new production, i.e. the amount mined that year. For store value commodities like gold, platinum, or silver, a high ratio indicates that they are mostly not consumed in industrial applications. So a high ratio shows it's increasingly scarce.
Right. So this is a classic model applied to gold as a store of value and gives it some juice when central bankers get together and decide, hey, how are we going to organize the global economy? Let's use gold. Well, we don't want too much gold appearing because that would be bad. So let's come up with the stock-to-flow model, and this has been around for decades. And a few people, including Plan B, figured out that, hey, you could apply this to Bitcoin, and the results would be quite interesting.
Right. So Plan B, welcome to Double Down. Can you tell us a little bit more about stock-to-flow? What made you apply this to Bitcoin, and how does it help to value an asset?
Yeah, absolutely. Since I am an institutional investor, I'm used to working with models, with fundamental models to value an asset. And most of the time, that's cash flow models, of course. Cash flow models that model bonds or mortgages or derivatives. But for gold and also for Bitcoin, that's not possible. So I use the stock to flow measure because it's well known in the gold community and use that as an input, actually, for a model that predicts the market value of Bitcoin or the price. And well, that turned out very, very great. The results were quite stunning. So that's really where it began.
Right. So in the case of Bitcoin, you have something called absolute scarcity. There's 21 million coins in total that'll ever be mined. There are over 18 million, I believe, have already been mined. Unlike gold, however, gold, you still have 2 or 3% of that flow coming into the market versus the stock, which is the already existing amount. And you also have kind of an outlier risks with gold. There could be suddenly what technology to mine gold from ocean water, which would generate thousands of tons, or there could be asteroid mining, which would generate a lot of gold, et cetera. So there's a bit of a question mark. But with Bitcoin, Plan B, it is, in fact, absolute scarcity, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the most interesting part of it. I sometimes talk about Bitcoin as not being an asset anymore. And that's exactly what I mean, that it's absolute scarcity is something we have never seen. And well, so it will be very difficult to value that. But at least until it reaches the level of gold regarding scarcity, we can project the gold price and use the stock to flow model. But once we go beyond gold, and that's not now, that's not the next few years, but after next halving in 2024, then the stock to flow ratio of Bitcoin will be 100 or even more. And yeah, it will be very, very interesting how that absolute scarcity will be priced then. I mean, the model gives a value, but it will be extrapolating from data we have never seen before.
So let's go into this latest piece you have as well, which is the stock to flow across asset models. And name some of the various phase transitions that Bitcoin has gone through. So like gold, as you say, the stock to flow model was developed around gold, but gold can be money, gold can be jewelry, gold can be used as a conductor in industrial processes. So it serves different functions. So how does the stock to flow across asset models work, and what further detail does it give to you, and what are the phase transitions we've seen?
Yeah, so the first stock to flow model was purely based on Bitcoin data, Bitcoin historical data. It was a time series model. And I noticed that gold and silver also had stock to flow values, and they were not in the formula. So the latest model that I made, the stock to flow cross asset model, has indeed gold and silver in there. And the data of both Bitcoin, silver, and gold, they're all used to come up with this formula. If we look at Bitcoin, we can actually identify four phases in the past. And I look upon those phases as Bitcoin being a different asset, basically. So the first phase in the beginning, say until 2012 or something, 11, Bitcoin was small. It was a proof of concept. There was a white paper. The software was out there, but whether it was working, that was to be seen. And a lot of changes were made, and the market cap was really small, in the order of magnitude 1 million. The whole Bitcoin market cap was $1 million. So that was the first phase. Then there was a very distinct event that marked the second phase, the beginning of the second phase, and that was the dollar parity of Bitcoin, when the Bitcoin reached $1 value. And I think it was about the time Max and you started the Kaiser Report as well. It became a more known asset. It became, well, something that you could actually use for money transfer for small amounts, cup of coffee or some other small amounts. I know micropayments was the talk of town at the time. But that later transformed into a third phase when gold parity was almost reached, because the price of Bitcoin really went up fast in that second phase. It went from $1 to $100 to over $1,000 in 2013. And I think gold was like $1,250 at the moment, an ounce of gold. So the story about Bitcoin getting gold parity, basically, and being e-gold, came up, and that marked the third phase. Now the fourth phase that we're in actually right now still, the current phase is marked by investors, hedge funds, gold investors coming into the market and making Bitcoin more of a real financial asset, with futures market in Chicago and New York, with option markets. So yeah, that marked a really distinct fourth phase, and now the fifth phase is coming. And yeah, nobody knows, of course, how it will look like, but we know how its valuation will be. It will be, if you believe in the stock-to-flow cross-asset model, it will be around $5 to $6 trillion.
Right. That would bring it up to starting to be comparative to the valuation of gold. I wanted to kind of go back here and ask you, when you say that you no longer consider Bitcoin to be an asset, what do you mean by that? Can you dig into that more?
Yeah, it, I know it's strange to say that, but because Bitcoin has a long way to go as an asset, it still is not an institutional asset, an institutional grade asset that banks and pension companies like my employer would put on their balance sheet, and that our regulators are comfortable with banks and pension funds having that on the balance sheet. But in the end, Bitcoin is so much more than that. It will be the absolute scarce thing. It will be the unit of account. It will be, yeah, like a metric, basically, like a kilogram, like a meter. And you have to imagine that we are building this whole economy and financial system on a unit of account, the dollar, which is the reserve currency, but a unit of account that is inflated every day, that is changing in, well, scarcity, but in value as well, every day. And that is like an architect building a building with a meter that is different every day. Imagine how a house like that would look like. So if we have absolute scarcity and Bitcoin as a metric of value, then I think we can build economies and financial systems that we cannot even imagine. This will lead us straight to the next renaissance. That's what I think.
Right. So when you're saying Bitcoin would cease to be an asset per se, you mean it becomes a unit of account. And this is a classic progression of money from a collectible to a store of value, to a medium of exchange, and then unit of account. And so now we're in the store of value phase where you see it will become roughly parity with gold. And at some point, it just becomes a unit of account. So people just, everything is priced in Bitcoin. When you go shopping, it'll be however many Satoshis for a dozen eggs or however many Bitcoin for a house or a boat. And so it becomes ubiquitous and you don't really see it as a separate asset class, just like people don't necessarily see the dollar as a separate asset class. It's just everything's priced in dollars. So you see everything priced in Bitcoin. And this, of course, would lead to the possibility of corporations starting to use Bitcoin as a unit of account before a community or a government. What would happen if a corporation like Amazon or Elon Musk's company Tesla started using Bitcoin as a unit of account? Wouldn't that suddenly make their income statement look great?
Yeah, that's a very interesting thing to look at. And I talk about this with some of the more financially orientated Bitcoiners like Preston. If you can already transfer all the existing profit and loss accounts and financial statements into Bitcoin and look what happens the last 10 years. And it's really amazing what you see then. So, I think the whole world will change. And mind you, in Europe, where I live, we have negative interest rates already, right, for years. So, that turned everything on its head as well, because all the models that I've been working with, that discounted cash flow models, stopped working. How do you discount something with a negative cash flow? So you use Bitcoin, the world looks very, very different.
Yeah, I often joke that negative interest rates really serve only Goldman Sachs because they can go back in time and steal money from clients in the past. Well, anyway, Plan B. Thanks so much for being on Double Down, and that's going to do it for this edition of Double Down with me, Max Kaiser, and Stacey Herbert on Sputnik Radio. I'd like to thank our guest, Plan B. You can definitely find him on Twitter. He's got a great Twitter handle to follow all these things that are going on in the Twittosphere. And he also has a fantastic website at planbtc.com. Oh, yeah, you got to check that out. Well, that's going to do it for us. Until next week, bye, y'all.